Thank you, and thank you very much to the organizers for inviting me. I don't work very much in this field, so it's been great listening to all the talks, and I've learned a lot. A central obsession with condensed matter physicists is to classify and categorize the different phases of matter. Going back to the days of Landau, we thought of phases of matter as like Hamiltonians and systems of symmetry, and phases of matter either break those symmetries or preserve those symmetries, and that is all there was. Of course, we know that this picture is incomplete, and with the discovery of the fractional quantum Hall effect, and lots of work following, we know that we have topologically ordered phases of matter, which are not characterized by local patterns of symmetry breaking. Further, they can be defined in Hamiltonians which don't have any symmetry. They're not protected by any underlying symmetries, right? Much of the excitement of the last decade with the discovery of topological insulators has centered in this square, which is symmetry-protected topological phases of matter. Of course, the first example in this category went back to the Haldane chain, which just got the Nobel Prize. In this conference, we've heard many, many interesting things on these phases. This last square that I have here seems like a contradiction in sorts, right? How can you have symmetry breaking in Hamiltonians without symmetry? It'll turn out that in flow case systems, you can get exactly this kind of magic trick. What you find is that there's an emergent symmetry that gets broken, okay? Much like topological order, these phases are stable without any underlying symmetry protection, okay? Since we just heard this beautiful talk about time translation symmetry breaking, I want to emphasize that the symmetry that I'm talking about here is not time translation symmetry, even though that will also be present, okay? Finally, I want to say that in this entire structure, since we're going to be talking about dynamical and driven systems, for these squares that we understood previously, implicit is the assumption that I'm working with a static system or a system with continuous time translation symmetry. If I relax that assumption, then everything just heats up to infinite temperature, as we've heard, and nothing special happens. In this square, I'm not going to have continuous time translation symmetry, but I'm going to insist on having discrete time translation symmetry. Okay, so it's a weaker requirement than this other structure. Okay, so what I'm going to say has some parallels with topological order, let me just start by very briefly talking about that. Let me just do the simplest case of the toric code, okay? We all know that on a torus, the toric code has four-fold ground state degeneracy. We can write these Wilson loop operators, which are line operators, which have a zero law exactly at the toric code point. So you know the operator, and you measure it, and you get a one for different loops, okay? What's special about this is, of course, that the toric code point is absolutely stable to all local perturbations. It does not require symmetries for its protection, okay? The consequence of that is there's a spectral consequence, which is even away from the fixed point, the ground state degeneracy, you still have a four-fold ground state degeneracy, but now it's exponentially split, okay? Away from the fixed point, the low-energy physics is still described by an emergent Z2 gauge theory, right? And following Hastings and Wen, if you take this emergent gauge symmetry, we can do a local unitary transformation, which basically converts these Wilson line operators into more complicated Hamiltonian-dependent fattened operators. But for these more complicated operators, as a result of this emergent Z2 gauge symmetry, we still get a zero law, okay? What I'll show you is that in the flow case setting, there are going to be analogs to both these properties. There's going to be an analog to this spectral feature. There's going to be a spectral analog, and there's going to be an analog in the sense of an emergent symmetry, okay? As an aside, I'll mention that the perturbed toric code can be thought of as the symmetry-broken phase of an emergent one-form global symmetry. In this language, actually, everything that I'm saying is pretty natural if you just replace the one form with the zero form, but let's not worry about that. Okay, so the work that I'll describe was done in this set of papers with my advisor, Shivaji Sondhi at Princeton, and with Achilleus Lazaridis and Roderick Mosner at Max Planck, and Kurt von Kayserlingk, who's a PCTS postdoc, and you know, after the last two very nice talks, there'll definitely be many overlapping themes from what you just heard, but hopefully then I'll tell you something somewhat different and interesting. Okay. So by now this has been hammered into us, but if you have a closed interacting generic driven system, you expect to heat up, expect at late times that it heats up to infinite temperature. Okay. And this is just very standard linear response reasoning. You're driving the system, it's going to absorb some energy from the drive, and then it heats up. Okay. With a periodic driving, disorder in MBL, and weak driving, this fate can be avoided. And here the intuition is that, you know, in this MBL setting, you should think of your degrees of freedom as mostly decoupled local Rabi oscillators, each with their own little frequency, which is set by this disorder scale. So as long as you drive it with a frequency that's much, much bigger than this local scale of disorder, and with weak enough amplitude, you're basically not effectual in exciting any of these degrees of freedom, so your system is not absorbing energy indefinitely, and you can remain localized. Okay, so you know the next question is, you know, we don't start by writing a partition function. We don't, you know, in an inherently non-equilibrium setting due to the presence of MBL and driving. So how do we define phases in this context where we don't, we shouldn't be thinking about the Gibbs ensemble, right? And here we rely on this idea of eigenstate order, which was put forward in the context of MBL, okay? And the punchline is that individual many-body eigenstates of a system will exhibit patterns of order. This could be symmetry breaking order or topological order, okay? And you know, via the eigenstate thermalization hypothesis, there really isn't any distinction between eigenstate order and order defined via some Gibbs ensemble for ergodic systems, because a single eigenstate agrees, expectation values of local observables in single eigenstates agree with the Gibbs ensemble in some well-defined energy window, okay? Of course, in MBL systems, this fails, okay? You have what's known as eigenstate chaos, because states that are very, very close in energy, exponentially close in energy, actually have very different local properties. So there's no such agreement. And by piggybacking on eigenstate order, we can actually get possibilities that are not allowed in an equilibrium setting. So you can get you know, both topological and symmetry-breaking kinds of orders that are not allowed. And because a lot of my talk will focus on this, you know, very simple Ising model, I'm just gonna illustrate this idea of eigenstate order for a static Ising model. Okay, so I have the 1D transverse field Ising chain. Okay, in equilibrium, there's no disorder in any of the couplings. Okay, this has this Ising symmetry, which I'm calling the parity, where all spins flip. Okay, in equilibrium, we know that there's an ordered phase only at zero temperature. And at any finite temperature, by the Pyrrhal's Mermin-Wagner theorem, you don't have any order, right? So what that means is at any finite temperature, you have a finite density of domain walls. So if you go in and you measure something like a spin-spin correlation function, you'll always get something that's exponentially decaying with the distance, okay? But exactly at zero temperature, if I turn off the transverse field, my eigenstates just look like up and down cat states of this form. And if I perturb away, then again, there's a local unitary transformation that dresses the state so that my spins are not exactly plus or minus, but the general structure continues. Okay. With disorder, this paramagnet gets promoted to a spin glass phase that's actually present at all energy densities. And the picture here is just that at any finite energy density, we have a finite density of domain walls, but now instead of being delocalized, these domain walls get pinned. So if you come in and you measure some two-point function, you don't get something exponentially decaying, but it saturates to some non-zero constant in this exact trivial form, state. It's just plus or minus one. Okay. Good. So, you know, this is going to very naturally generalize in the Floquet setting, because we're just going to consider these periodic Hamiltonians. We'll have a Floquet unitary, which we can diagonalize, and then we can look at the eigenvalues and eigenvectors of this Floquet unitary. And in cases where there is no heating as a result of MBL, we'll find that these eigenstates can actually show interesting properties. They can show order. And in particular, some of the phases that we'll see as defined by this eigenstate order are just driven analogs of static MBL phases, nothing new. but some exist only in the flow case setting. Okay, so let me just start by illustrating these ideas in an Ising model. Okay, and I'm going to consider these what's known as these bang bang drives, where my Hamiltonian is just switching between two different models. Okay, so for the first part of my drive, I act with HZ, which is this Ising coupling term, and for the second part, I just act with this transverse field term, and the dot 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 refers to the fact that I'm going to allow for interactions and perturbations and all of that stuff, and for now, I'm restricting myself to interactions that are going to be Ising symmetric. Okay, and what we find is this. Nice phase structure, which four phases, okay, the trivial paramagnet and the zero spin glass are just driven versions of phases that already exist in the static setting. The zero spin glass is what I just talked about, it's just the disordered transistorializing model, a generalization of that. Okay, but then we find two new phases. The zero pi paramagnet is actually an Ising SPT, which was then, and you know, by now we have an extensive classification of Ising SPTs by Kurt and Shivaji and Drew and Ashwin and Dominic and Chetan. So this is an SPT phase, which I won't be talking about very much. But this phase, which we call the pi spin glass, is a phase which has the spin glass order in space, and it has this, I'll explain in a second what the pi refers to, okay? But this is going to be the hero of our story, and everything that we're going to say is going to focus on this model and its perturbations. And I should say that this model, I guess by now it's obvious, but this model has since been renamed twice, and now you can call it either a flow k-time crystal or a discrete time crystal or a pi spin glass, whatever you choose. Okay. So let's just work out some of the. I'm just going to briefly talk about some of the fixed points in this phase diagram because it'll be illustrative, and then the properties of the fixed points extend into the phase with Ising symmetric perturbations. Okay, so with the trivial paramagnet, I'm basically just not acting with the J part of my drive. Okay, I have my flow K unitary just looks like Hi sigma I x. You know, obviously the eigenstates of this are just product states in sigma x, and because of the disorder, you don't get delocalized superpositions of spin flips. And your eigenstates have no long-range order, and the eigenvalues are just whatever they happen to be from those fields. Okay. Similarly, in the zero-spin glass, I just turn off the H part, so now it just looks like time evolution with a disordered Ising model. My flow-k eigenstates just look like even and odd superpositions, right? They're these cat states. And the flow k eigenvalues, again, just has a piece which comes from this disordered coupling bit, okay? And that's at this point, okay? Now I'm gonna do the fixed point model for this pi spin glass, okay? And here, if I turn off the disorder in HT2 and I act with it for time pi over 2, then this Hx part of the Hamiltonian basically just implements a perfect pi pulse, right? So I've taken all my spins and I've flipped them perfectly. And then in this remainder, I have this Ising interaction piece, right? So now the eigenstates look the same as they did in the zero spin glass fixed point, right? You just have even odd superpositions because parity is still a good quantum number and your eigenstates commute with parity. The crucial difference is that in going from 0 to pi, the flow k eigenvalues for the plus and minus cats actually now pick up this extra sign as a result of this p piece in the flow k unitary, right? The plus cat comes with a plus sign and the minus cat comes with a minus sign. So that if I take the log of these eigenvalues to define these flow k quasi-energies, which are only defined mod 2 pi, I find that the plus and minus cats actually define quasi-energy by pi over t, okay? So that's what the pi refers to. It's the splitting between plus and minus cats. And exactly at this fixed point, the splitting is exact. Okay, that's the spectral property that I was alluding to earlier. And as you perturb away from this fixed point, you'll see that signatures of this pairing will persist, except that now the plus and minus cats are going to be exponentially paired. Okay. Let me just briefly mention some other properties about this point. First, as I said, it's pretty obvious that it commutes with the Ising symmetry. what's special is that, you know, this point actually has a whole set of additional anti-unitary symmetries that you may not have naively expected. And these take the form not just of complex conjugation, but it's also complex conjugation times a spatial piece, like complex conjugation times the parity flip in the x direction, or complex conjugation times the parity flip in the y direction. This is a highly symmetric point, and these extra anti-unitary symmetries also end up having consequences for the dynamics that we see in this problem. Okay, the eigenstates are cat states, as I said, with opposite parity differing by in quasi-energy by pi over t. There's long-range spin-glass order. Okay. And you can see that sigma z anti-commutes with this unitary, okay? So acting with sigma z toggles a plus cat. If you act with sigma z on a plus cat, you get a minus cat, right? Or a different way of saying that is that if you just write down the operator equation of motion for sigma z, you see that there's this minus 1 to the n, okay? Which means that this sigma z operator is actually periodic with period 2t, okay? And this is already hinting at this time translation invariance breaking that's going to be present in the problem. Okay. So this word pi spin glass is trying to emphasize two aspects of the dynamics. Okay. One is this, you know, if I just start in some product state of z's, after a period t, since I've hit it with this pi pulse, everything's going to flip, right? And then it's going to flip back after 2t. Okay. So that's this temporal direction. But then there's this long-range spin glass order in space, which means if I measure some two-point function, I don't get zero. Okay. And you know, I want to say that this connects very much with Oshikawa and Watanabe's definition of time crystals, because you don't want to think of a system of decoupled Rabi oscillators or decoupled spins in a magnetic field as a time crystal. You want some coherent long-range order in space. And you know, at this Ising 6 points, that it's coming from this Ising order. Okay. So, you know, at this point, I often get a question which is like, oh, but why is this non-trivial? Because you're literally hitting it with a pi pulse, so of course things are going to be 2T periodic. Why is it surprising? But of course, the message is that you can perturb away from this special point, right, and you continue to get this very stable 2T response, okay? So here I'm just showing some numerical results where I did something very simple. I just took the model that I had, and instead of hitting it with a perfect pi pulse, I rotated the pulse away a little bit. So if you were thinking purely semi-classically, your intuition would be that, okay, you know, after one period, the spins are slightly rotated away, and then after the next one, you know, you accumulate this error to the point where if you're waiting for very long times, you just get nonsense, okay? So that's like fixing a particular value of the mean disorder and just moving horizontally in this direction. And what I find is that for a whole range of this error in the rotation, I actually get a very stable peak at pi in the power spectrum of my time series. So if I just come in and I start with some initial state and I measure sigma z as a function of time, I take its Fourier transform. If it's 2T periodic, you see you expect a peak at pi. And if it's just periodic with some rotated, you know, epsilon parameter, then these peaks split. And what this graph is telling you is that for a whole range, it remains stuck at pi before eventually splitting into two. Okay. Good. So now, you know, the obvious question is, and this was very much this question was very much inspired by the work of Dominic and Bella and Chetan, is that what happens if you're not considering only Ising symmetric perturbations? What about absolutely any perturbation, generic perturbations, right? So it's not surprising that the zero spin glass and the trivial paramagnet, these are just like the usual Ising phases. If you explicitly break Ising symmetry in such a problem, you know, there's no distinction between them, right? They're only distinguished by the presence of Ising symmetry. Similarly, for this Ising SPT, you can show that if you allow absolutely any perturbations, you know, it doesn't continue into an analog of itself. And these three phases are just connected to each other, and they just look like a trivial paramagnet. What's perhaps surprising is that I can take this pi spin glass model and perturb it with absolutely anything, and the essential features of this model will persist under those perturbations. Okay, and here I should flag that, you know, as I said, we're starting this off at a very symmetric, a very special initial point, which has these anti-unitary and unitary symmetries. So depending on the direction in which I perturb, as a consequence of these symmetries, like if I just perturb along this line, which is the one we did with just sizing symmetry, or along the lines with anti-unitary symmetries, it has consequences for the dynamics and the order in physical observables that an experimentalist can come in and measure, okay? But more generally, you know, you can perturb anywhere and you get this rich landscape that's more general, and that has consequences for almost all observables, okay? So the question is, why is this pi spin glass so stable, right? What makes it special from everything else? And I don't have time to go into all the details, but the basic intuition is that for this particular model, the stability of MBL actually implies the stability of the phase, okay? So in a sense, MBL as a phenomenon is also an example of something absolutely stable, because you start with some generic disordered model and you can perturb it with whatever you want, and the dynamical properties persist under those perturbations, okay? And the way you think about MBL is that, you know, you had some model, and under the, you know, if the system is localized, there exists some finite depth local unitary that diagonalizes this Hamiltonian and gives you a different one, which is written purely in terms of these tau variables, which are called L bits for localized bits, okay? And this is the local Hamiltonian in terms of these tau bits, okay? And these are emergent integrals of motions which constrain your dynamics and all of that. So if I use the same machinery and I apply it to the Floquet problem, what I find is that, you know, I started with some unperturbed unitary, which just looked like this exact pi spin glass fixed point. It had a parity, and then it had these domain wall operators. And now I'm going to perturb it with some perturbation. Okay, this perturbation should respect the time translation symmetry of my drive, but other than that, I only require it to be local. Okay, and the stability of localization implies that there's some local unitary which relates the time translation operator corresponding to this perturbed drive with that of the original drive, okay? And correspondingly, the eigenstates at the fixed point and the perturbed point are themselves related by this local unitary, right? So, you know, using this unitary transformation, I can define Floquet L bits, which are slightly tilted versions of the old sigma variables that I have, and I can define dressed parity and domain wall operators, okay? And once I go through this whole machinery, what I find is that this perturbed unitary actually looks exactly like the fixed point model in terms of these dressed operators, okay? And the upshot of that is that if you look at this this perturbed unitary, it has emergent unitary and anti-unitary symmetries, which are the rotated versions of the old P's and the old T's, okay? And these are in general, just like in the emergent Z2 case, if you take the fat and Wilson loop, it's generically complicated and it's going to be Hamiltonian dependent. But a lot of the physics can be understood by thinking of these emergent symmetries, and they have consequences for physical observables and physical states, which is great. Okay. So if you look at exactly this fixed point model, right? What you see is that, you know, because it looks exactly like what your old model looked like in terms of the tau variables, you have long-range order and temporal oscillations, or 2T periodic oscillations, in this emergent order parameter, which is tau z, okay? And you continue to get the spectral property, which is the spectral pairing of pi, okay? And now if you expand your physical observables in terms of your emergent observables, you get non-trivial behavior, okay? So with that, I'm going to switch to the dynamical consequences of this emergent Ising symmetry and these emergent anti-unitary symmetries. Right. So I'm going to consider three cases. Okay. First, these alphas are eigenstates of my Floquet unitary. So if I simply look at single-time operators, this is just like looking at one-point functions in ground states of symmetric Hamiltonians. Okay. Nothing special happens here. These are strictly periodic with period T. To see something non-trivial, I need to look at unequal time correlators. Okay, so this, and More precisely, I'll allow myself to look at unequal space and unequal time correlators. Okay, so I have some operator at some location R, which I'm probing at NT, and an operator at S. Okay, so you find that if you look at this quantity, right, which is the direct analog of what Oshikawa and Watanabe were considering in a Floquet setting, because I'm measuring this observable in a Floquet eigenstate, it actually has a pretty non-trivial behavior, because if you look at any finite R minus S, so if I'm not separating these operators by infinity in space, right, I find that I get a bunch of local incommensurate frequencies which correspond to just locally exciting different modes in your system. Okay. And this looks glossy, right? It's not just this 2T periodic response that's stuck at pi. You get all these extra frequencies and they never go away. Okay, they're always there because this is an eigenstate. I'm literally just measuring an eigenstate, an unequal time correlator in an eigenstate. Okay, if on the other hand I take the separation of these operators off to infinity, then some local excitation here cannot be undone by something super far away. Okay, and then all these extra incommensurate frequencies disappear, and then you get something purely crystalline which has a mode at pi and a mode at zero. Okay, so. So it actually has this very nice picture where if you look at unequal time correlators with a small spatial separation, it more correctly looks like a time gloss because there are these extra frequencies, okay? But if you look at, and likewise, if you look at unequal space correlators at a fixed time, then as we said, it looks like a spin gloss, right? And it's only if you look along this diagonal where you've taken the spatial separation off to infinity and you've taken looking at very long times that you see this emergent spatiotemporal order, which is measuring both this the spatial order and the fact that temporally you get 2T periodic dynamics. Okay. And, you know, of course, as a formal matter, thinking about eigenstates is really nice. That's how we're used to thinking about symmetry breaking in general. Okay, but it's important to ask, what about generic initial states, right? If you went to an experimentalist and you told them, prepare an eigenstate for me, they're not going to be able to do it, right? So the upshot is that this structure actually has very nice consequences for generic eigenstates that are not for generic initial states that are not eigenstates. Okay. So here, because this isn't an eigenstate of the problem, I can start with absolutely any initial state, and I can measure any operator, okay? And here I find that there's a piece in the temporal dynamics which is just constant, whatever, that's uninteresting. There's a piece which oscillates at 2t, okay? And then there are these extra incommensurate frequencies that I alluded to, but in this generic initial state, at very late times, these go away as a power law in time through and this you can understand by some standard dephasing arguments in the MBL literature. Okay, so no, just a one-point function, but I'm starting in a generic initial state. Okay, so it's like an experimentalist can just prepare some product state, take some generic physical operator, right? Like here, I'm taking my operators to just be the physical sigma x, y, and z, and as a consequence of this emergentizing symmetry, these operators have not only long-range order in space, but also this non-trivial time dynamic, such that at very late times, only these two pieces crystallize out, and these have all gone away. Okay. Comes from what? Yeah. I'm measuring the operator at different times. So I have a periodically driven system, and then I'm coming in, I'm getting a time series for an operator. That's O of NT. It's just as if I look at lots of different ends. So I look at I measure the operators stroboscopically after one period, two periods, three periods, four periods. Yeah. And then I get a whole series and then I Fourier transform it. Yeah. Okay. And, you know, so what this means is that, you know, you don't have to fine tune your Hamiltonian. You don't need to respect symmetries. You can perturb your Hamiltonian all you want. And you don't need to fine-tune your states, right? And you still see something interesting. So this is, of course, ripe for experimentalists. And there was a really nice experiment that was published recently by Chris Monroe's group. And you know, they basically simulated one of these Ising-like MBL models in a trapped ion chain, right? And they saw, you know, they're measuring some single-site magnetization, and they see these 2D periodic oscillations, which are very nice. And even more recently, so the paper was submitted yesterday, I was involved in some experiments with Misha Lukin's group in Harvard. And you know, this is actually, we saw something that was pretty surprising to me, to be honest, because we were working in this disordered dipolar system. It's a three-dimensional system with long-range interactions. You have 1/r³ interactions. You don't expect anything like MBL. We actually checked that it doesn't even fall into this nice pre-thermalization framework that Chetan described. So it's not an example of pre-thermalization. It's not an example of MBL. And yet they see stable oscillations and you know, a wide range of parameters where they continue to observe this phenomena. And it seems to only be limited by the intrinsic depolarization times in their experiment. Okay, so what exactly is going on here is something we're actively working on trying to figure out in the theoretical front, but it's not something that fits into, that naively fits into the MBL or pre-thermalization picture. So that's pretty exciting. And I'll leave my summary slide up. Well.
Yeah, I just had a kind of question slash comment about the analogies to topological order. So I guess if you restrict yourself to T-periodic perturbations,
right,
then it's clearly absolutely stable, as you
right.
guys showed. But I was wondering if a more natural criterion would be, you know, equivalence up to something that destroys localization, which is kind of the MBL version of equivalence up to closing the gap. And in that case, you're time crystal, or ice spin glass, whichever we're calling it now, is only stable up to T-periodic perturbations, not to 2T periodic.
No, that's right.
So doesn't that put it on the same footing as symmetry breaking and not topological order, which would not be unstable to any local
preserving? So I have two comments to that. One is, as I said in the at the start, if you take the toric code and you perturb it with whatever you want, it's going to heat up. You're not going to get something non-trivial. So you're already assuming static. You're already assuming static time translation. Sure. But then you're going to impose the additional structure of MBL and all of that stuff on it. So I'm saying that, yes, I'm holding in the, when I'm talking about absolute stability of topologically ordered systems, I'm keeping the time dependence fixed. Here I'm keeping the time dependence fixed. And
I mean, I
don't think so, because if you started with I don't see that analogy, because you started with time translation symmetry in the toric code, and if you perturb it, then you've broken that, and it doesn't preserve its properties unless you do a lot of extra things, right? If you say so, but I disagree. Well, we've talked to many people in the community, and okay. And I guess the second thing I'll say is that, you know, we've been relying on this idea of doing something non-violent to your unitary. You're perturbing it, you're rotating it by a local unitary, and if you change your periodicity from T to 2T, that's actually a very violent change in your unitary. It's not like a small perturbation of parameters. For example, if you take the toric code and you drive it by period T, there's going to be a pretty drastic change in its periodicity as well. So, in the structure of its time evolution operator. So, and then it is going to heat up unless you start it with some other stuff. So. Well, no. The analogies that I made earlier were not restricted to MBL. So, okay. Fiona, did you have a question?
Oh. I have a naive question. Could
okay.
you go back to you had a slide with like a 3D phase diagram?
A what phase diagram?
There was like a phase diagram with a third axis labeled H.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I apologize if this has been kind of explained and I missed it, but in this context, you know, when you say two phases are sort of connected, so, you know, planet. Mm-hmm. Can you clarify what that means in this context?
It means that if I started at the pi spin glass phase with order in some sigma variables, right, and some non-trivial dynamics in some so if I measured sigma of nt, that would show 2t periodicity. If I perturb using this, there's a unitarily rotated version of those operators, which will continue to exactly show you zero laws. But even if you don't want exact zero laws, which in this case takes the form of, you know, you measure a two-point function, you get exactly plus one or minus one, physical operators will continue to show long-range order and non-trivial temporal dynamics. And these rotated operators will continue to show zero laws and exact dynamics.
And basically continuously rotate.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Well, if not, let's thank the speaker again and take a lunch.